Sing.
Homeless, homeless.
Welcome to the 8th Annual Homelessness Marathon, a national dialogue on homelessness and poverty in America. The toll-free call-in number for this broadcast is 1-877-NOBODY-8. That's the word nobody, followed by the number 8. Or, if you're currently, recently, or about to be homeless, you may also call 1-866-LEFT-OUT. Back in the 1980s, when President Reagan began slashing social programs, he promised the American people that none of the truly needy would fall through the social safety net. But today we must ask if that promise has been kept, or if there's even a safety net at all. We'll talk to some homeless disabled folks and see, right after this national homeless news update.
Agencies administering the Housing Voucher Program, also known as Section 8, received word from the Department of Housing and Urban Development on January 21st that they are once again going to have to administer the program on far fewer dollars than originally expected. Agencies will experience a 4% cut in fiscal year 2005 housing assistance payments. The president of the National Low-Income Housing Coalition said that the announcement was the latest in a series of actions taken by HUD to undermine the housing voucher program and the housing stability of thousands of families. The cuts will force agencies to require low-income families to pay more for their housing, help fewer people, or both. The coalition is calling on Congress to reverse their actions. The voucher program is the largest federal low-income housing program, currently serving over 2 million low-income households. More than half of all voucher holders are families with children. Another 40% are seniors or people with disabilities. Most families seeking assistance face waits of as long as 10 years.
On Monday, January 31st, Oregon state lawmakers got an up-close look at the desperation experienced by people living on the streets. That Monday morning, shortly before noon, a man entered the Senate chamber with a 10-inch knife at his chest and threatened to cut his throat. He demanded to see Oregon Governor Ted Kulongoski and talked about his homelessness. Authorities also believe that the man was mentally ill and may have been under the influence of intoxicants. The man was talked out of the situation and disarmed. No one was injured. The event has lawmakers calling for more safety checkpoints at the state capitol, including metal detectors. But social service and homeless advocates see it as another example of the increasing desperation among people either living on the streets or threatened with homelessness due to cuts in the Section 8 housing program, Medicaid, and health care benefits. In Oregon, the state's Medicaid program implemented cutbacks last year. In Portland, Oregon's largest city, housing authorities announced $3.8 million in cuts to the Section 8 program. Both reductions mean recipients have been required to pay more towards housing and health care. The waiting list for Section 8 housing vouchers in Multnomah County is 2 years old and could extend another 5 years. Janet Hawkins, the acting coordinator with the Commission for Children, Families, and Community in Multnomah County, said many people are in the same situation as the man who entered the state capitol. Lawmakers, she said, need to get out and experience the extreme conditions many people suffer in silence. We can only destabilize people's situation to a certain point, and then it all falls apart, Hawkins said. The center won't hold.
In a twist on student field trips, Seattle University is hosting a homeless tent city as a part of its spring studies. The Jesuit school invited the homeless community to set up camp around the university's tennis courts to give students an up-close and hands-on experience with homelessness. According to a report in the Seattle Times, about 80 men and women set up the camp on the university's tennis courts, a few blocks from the main campus. They will stay there for the entire month of February. This is the first time the university has hosted the encampment, one of several tent cities in the Seattle area. The community will be the hub for a series of programs and events about homelessness. The tent city will be open to visitors from the student body and the general public. Sociology and philosophy students will be spending time in the tent city talking with residents, while nursing and law school students will provide health and legal advice. Dinner will be cooked and served by staff and students, who have also organized collection drives for such necessities as sleeping bags and flashlights. On any given night in King County, about 8,000 homeless men and women will seek shelter. Only 4,600 shelter beds are available. Seattle University has compiled a fact sheet on homelessness and prepared a listing of educational resources about poverty and homelessness that are available online and in print. The tent cities are organized by Share and Wheel, two nonprofits that aid the homeless. The first two, Tent City 1 and Tent City 2, no longer exist. Tent City 3, the one located at Seattle University, has moved 45 times since it started in early 2000. Seattle also hosts a Tent City 4 on its east side.
For the Homelessness Marathon, I'm Orion Gray.
And I'm Liam Delta.
Additional assistance by Joanne Zuhl. KBOO, Portland, Oregon.
Hi, everybody. It's me, Nobody, and welcome to the 14th and last hour of this year's, the 8th Annual Homelessness Marathon, where the numbers to call in are 877-NOBODY-8 or 866-LEFT-OUT. And if you want to see the scene here, you can go to www.homelessnessmarathon.org and you'll see our webcam. Now, a funny thing happened on the way to the 14th hour. We were supposed to have a panel of disabled homeless people, but some of the people who were scheduled to be on the panel, it turns out, were placed in other housing. So we don't have a whole panel, but we are very honored to have with us Alfonso, who will be my co-host, and we'll have a kind of open mic hour, and Alfonso and I will talk to people. But Alfonso, welcome to the Homelessness Marathon.
Thank you very much. It's nice to be here.
It's wonderful to have you. Now, for people who can't see on the webcam, Alfonso is in a wheelchair. Alfonso, can you tell people who are listening something about your medical condition?
I have dystonia. Something has to do with my nervous system on the left side of my body. All right, from my head all the way down to my left side of my back, my fingertips, on my left hand, all the way down to my left side of my toes. And I've been in this position since 1999. And so far, I had had other doctors, but yet, finding out by last week or so that there's no cure for this and possibility of surgery, but they're not sure that this is gonna work. And I had the city helping me out.
Now, I remember back to 1980, 81, whatever it was, when Ronald Reagan, 82, started making cuts. And he said in the budget, he said, the truly needy won't fall through the safety net. Alfonso, would you say you're truly needy? You're truly not somebody who can be fending for himself without help?
I can't defend my own self without help because I need help.
Okay. Are you in the safety net? Do you feel you're getting adequate help at this point?
Not the real help that I really need with this problem.
Okay. What do you need?
What I need is to find some type of doctor that can possibly help me walk again, and that I can feel safe enough that the surgery can go through, because they're talking a 50-50 chance that it would work, or possibility that I can, pass away, and that's something I don't want to do. I'm too young. I'm 47 years old, and I like to live, longer so I can live a productive life. And being homeless is not too good for me because, there are days where I really need to rest and lay down, and sometimes that doesn't happen.
Mm. Now, Alfonso, but there's nobody rushing you to the top of any waiting list. Nobody is saying, this guy is truly needy, let's make sure he gets some kind of assisted living situation.
No one is not rushing me at all. I've been waiting for a while now. And
how long have you been waiting?
Well, I've been to almost every doctor around, but I've been waiting since 2000.
So 4 years you've been in the process, and you don't have housing.
No, I do not have housing. right now, I wish I had housing right now, because I can get the proper rest and the proper medical that I need, and possibly, you know, the aid, you know, and visiting nurse, you know, coming to the house, because I love to cook and I no longer can stand over a stove and cook.
Do you live here at Columbus House?
Yes, I do.
And how is that for you?
Being here at the Columbus House to me is not so bad, you know. I get the proper help that I get here from the staff here. And, you know, they treat me with respect as I treat them, you know. And they give me the help that I really need. And, you know, my caseworker, you know, Mr. Fox, he's doing great, you know, with me. So I don't have a problem with that.
Okay, well, I'm good. That's good. But nonetheless, it's not permanent housing, and that is something that you need. And have you met, while you've been here, other disabled people in a similar situation to yours?
Yes, I have met other people in a similar position that they have been in, you know, and whatnot. But, you know, for them, you know, they're doing great, you know. My problem is being in constant pain that never ends. And even while I'm talking here on the radio, I'm in pain now, you know, and it never ends, never stops. It's 24/7. And I find myself that I really need some type of relief.
Now, what about your medical care? Who pays for that? How do you get good medical care, do you feel?
I'm on disability, so my disability is paying for my medical, but it's not as good as I would like it to be, because, you know, and then the state, and then sometimes with the state, when they put me on spin down, I have the tendency to suffer because I can't get the medication.
What is spin down?
Spin down is like when the state says that you are having some type that you're not meeting the quota, and you have to spend about $35 or maybe $300 just to meet that quota. And when you can't, then you end up pulling money out of your Social Security check. Sometimes you can't do that because your medical, you know, problem is too expensive, and mine is like somewhere near almost $2,000, you know, a month. And I find that being a real problem for me, because sometimes I can't get the proper medical and medicine that I really need because I can't afford it.
All right, Alfonso, we don't have a whole panel here, so what I'd like to do is just make you my co-host, and I want to take calls and talk to people and come back to you, but I want you to talk to people who come up, and you'll be my co-host like anybody else would be on this.
Yes, sir.
Is okay? I appreciate that. On the line, we have David from New Haven. David, are you there?
Hi. Yes. Like one of your earlier callers, I'm a Yale undergraduate, and I'm a member of the advocacy group RespectLine.
Okay.
And I was calling basically to bring attention to New Haven's length of stay policy, and I kind of wanted to form an open discussion on length of stay policies and what can be done to improve the shelter system in general, and not in just in New Haven, but across America.
Okay, well, say what you want to say.
All right, so New Haven's length of stay policy, as mentioned before, is a 90-day policy, and it's basically premised on the idea that clients are unmotivated themselves to get out of the shelter system. And it's my belief, and I think RespectLine's belief, that this has been kind of given an artificial Band-Aid solution by New Haven, and that would just be simply to kick people out of the shelters for 3 months after 90 days. And so I would like some type of more supportive model, such as supportive housing, put into place for people in the shelter system. So as Professor Colhane mentioned in the last hour, so that people would be placed into more supportive and more stable situations, so they're more likely to get out of chronic homelessness, as opposed to be being put into the cycle of homelessness by being put into unstable situations.
Okay, hang on a second. Those numbers, let me remind people, are 877-NOBODY-8 or 866 left out. Alfonso, are you facing a length of stay situation here?
Oh, yes, I'm in a LOS, yes. You know, they're giving me time, and still I'm looking for housing, and I have the city helping me. Yes, I am facing a length of stay.
Now, how much time do you have to find something?
Well, they're giving me as much time that I really need now, because they realize that the position that I'm in, that I'm not able to get around like I really need to without aid. And, you know.
So they're taking a more liberal position with you.
Yes, they are.
But you, in your stay here, you've seen people who've had to leave because their length of stay was used up?
Yes, I have.
And were they all people who left to get housing, or were their stay used up and they still didn't have housing?
Some had left to get housing, and some had left for other programs, and some had left because their time was up.
Okay. I'm trying to read something here that's on my computer screen, which under now that the sun is up, there's so much glare that I can barely read it. And this is what it says on my screen. It says, do you want someone with a brain tumor to join the panel? Well, of course, that counts as disability. And we were supposed to have a panel here. And, well, I'm glad that people got housing instead. So, yeah, by all means, I'm telling that to the people in the studio. So wherever this person is, sure. And David on the line, what do the people at RespectLine have to say about disabled people in New Haven who are having a hard time getting housing?
Sure. We would really like to see the city. I mean, it seems like in Alfonso's case, the city has done a good job of working with him and trying to meet his needs. But we would like to see generally just more access for services for disabled persons so that everybody could get the time necessary to actually get out of homelessness. And so I'm really it's really kind of uplifting to hear Alfonso's story and how the city's actually accommodating him. I think he's still facing this 90-day policy, and I think that if this was actually lifted and this was more effective and a better system of support and casework, that more people would be able to get out of homelessness quicker.
All right. Well, David, I want to thank you. I got a lot of things going on around here now, and I can barely read what people are telling me, but I want to thank you very much for participating in the marathon. And here next to me now is Doris. Doris, welcome to the Homelessness Marathon.
Thank you.
And if somebody can turn up Doris's mic, that'd be a good thing. Doris, you have a brain tumor?
I just had two brain tumors removed and the possibility of a third.
Okay, so you are disabled. You're not able to work at this point surgically.
That's correct.
Okay, and are you living at Columbus House?
Yes, I am, sir.
And how long have you been here?
I've been here 8 months.
So you also have been exempted from the length of stay requirement?
That's correct.
All right, but you have not been able to get housing. Are you on a waiting list? What's going on with that?
I have to say that the staff has worked very hard to get me out of here and into housing. When I had the brain tumor, they did take a piece of my brain out. So housing for me is difficult because I need to have certain housing that will help me, compensate for my disability. I will say that when I came here, I didn't realize that part of my brain was taken out. I basically came here to recuperate from the brain tumors. I had to relearn what was wrong with my brain and how I can compensate for it. And I will say that the staff has worked extremely hard to compensate for my brain tumor. My brain tumor repercussions, and they have gone out of their way to give me extra time to get my stuff together and to do what I needed to do and to keep me safe. Part of the brain tumor problem was that I cannot travel alone on the streets and be safe and make a good judgment calls. They have gone out of their way to make sure that I have stay in or I'm accompanied by someone to do that, including my two grown children. I think we need to work together with staff, a place like Fellowship and TIC, and a caseworker. My caseworker is Debbie Brooks from Outreach Program. They were down yesterday trying to get me to sign for housing. Housing here is very difficult. There isn't enough housing for us homeless people, whether we're disabled or not. But I think that we're all in this together. We all have to work together, and we all have to, band together. And instead of being a negative, be a positive.
Hang on there for a second, Doris, and hang on, Alfonso. I got somebody on the line who says they've only got minutes to speak, so I want to get him in here. Patrick, welcome to the Homelessness Marathon.
thank you very much. I'm calling from the radio stations of KPFK Los Angeles. It's a Pacifica outlet here in L.A., and I'm a volunteer phone answer during the fundraiser here. And I want to thank you personally, all and everybody there, including the panel and all your guests, and the people at the community radio who are hosting this, for doing this. And I want to thank here Roy Tuckman. He doesn't know what I'm calling, by the way. He's the midnight to 5:30 a.m. Programmer here in Los Angeles, host of this for a number of years. And I just want to encourage, is it Doris, her name?
Yes.
There's a technology that works very well for brain tumors. It's called the QX, capital O's QXCI technology. If she goes to Google, she'll find that and maybe find a practitioner. The case of a well-known celebrity doctor to Britney Spears and others who used the technology to specifically treat case of cancer, and it's very safe, and she might, I've used it myself, and I encourage her to check it out, and I would hope that, you know, people listening would have a shift in consciousness, and that maybe we can stop this war machine with a $400 billion budget and fund human needs for people who need it, truly need it, and that's my comment. I just want to thank you for all your good work.
I want to thank you. I want to also say a big thanks to KPFK, as I thank all of the stations that are carrying us.
Yeah, I hope the other Pacifica stations, WBAI especially, would pick this up. Are they carrying you guys?
No, we don't do. We don't get on WBAI. We don't get on WPFW, and they've all got their own reasons. But I know that.
Well, I hope that Bernard White and Don Rojas. That's the.
I'm not getting into
manager,
it.
I'll quote names.
But
here.
I just want to say this to KPFK. I know you're in a pledge drive now, and it's hard to put on outside programming, and that they made a real effort to do this, and I really want to thank everybody there.
And you are too, and Doris, God bless you.
Thank you. God bless you,
too. And hey, don't leave Alfonso out. He could use your blessing,
too. And Alfonso, too, brother.
All right, there you go.
Thank you.
Listen, let me ask you guys here. Is this a category? I mean, people who are disabled and homeless, I mean, do you have a particular solidarity with each other, or is it actually the other way around? It's because of your disabilities, is it harder for disabled homeless people to communicate and to work together?
I think it's difficult because we're all in a struggle, trying to get out. Each of us are trying to get out in our own way. Alphonse has, you know, reached out to try to help other people as other people have. There aren't that many disabled people like us here in the shelter. I don't believe a shelter was a place for me to recuperate from a brain tumor, although insurance didn't want to pay for me to go into a hospital to recuperate. The recuperation I needed was $18,000 a week.
Wow.
Yeah, insurance.
That ain't cheap.
No. And like I said, Debbie Brooksom, Cornerstone Outreach, and the people here have worked really hard. I've made a lot of mistakes. I've had to be compensated for a lot, and they've gone out of the way to do that. For me, housing wasn't an issue when I first came here because I wasn't well enough to go out and be in housing on my own. So they were like a safe haven for me. When they did allow me to go out and be on my own, I got raped and beaten. So I needed to come back and recuperate. There are people out there on the streets who are waiting for people like us who are disabled to take advantage of the disabilities that we do have, especially women like me who are white. And
makes you a target.
Yeah, it really does.
Well, that is really sad to hear. By the way, I just realized it's KPFA that is in its pledge break, so thanks to KPFA, but thanks to KPFK, too. Alfonso, do you feel, is there a special solidarity among the disabled, among the homeless, or is it just between all homeless people? Well, tell me what you think.
Well, I believe that there is some type of solidarity that we do have. But I find myself that I try to help other people because I realize that other people are worse off than me. And when I do, I'm still being pain. Just that, like, sometimes when another person is in a wheelchair, I find myself getting their food also as well. And then other people are helping me get my food here, because sometimes, you know, I find myself that it'd be days where I cannot even eat because it hurts too much, you know. And to me, there is, you know, a real problem with getting housing, especially with the ones on, you know, wheelchair. We don't have enough housings for wheelchair people, you know, and they really need it, and it's a real problem. But to me, I find myself that being homelessness and being out on the street, that I have more friends that care about me on the streets and in the Columbus House than my own family. And I find that being a real problem sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I find that there are days when the pain hurts so bad with me that I be crying. And then I think about my family and I start busting out crying. And I be trying to hold it in. But it's okay today because I find that in my own way that I find peace.
Well, may I say to you, Alfonso, and to you, Therese, as well, I want to say I'm very sorry that you're in this situation that you're in, and my heart goes out to you. And if I, you know, if I could just wave my fingers in the air and do something about it, I would, and I wish I had that ability.
So. May I say one thing?
Go ahead.
I will say that Gary Barnett, who is, I believe, the director here, he has gone out of his way, knowing that I was disabled. I can't speak for other disabled people, but has realized my deficits and has gone out of his way to, you know, take me to the bank, take me to the store, and his busy schedule, knowing that I can't do that myself. Yes, I need to get out of here, and yes, I need to be in my own apartment and independent, but the staff has worked extremely hard after knowing that I am a graduate from Yale, and I am a nurse, and it took a while to separate the fact that, yes, I am bright and intelligent and educated from the fact that I am now, you know, brain injured for a while. And he has gone out of his way to put up with my brain injury and the deficits I have and to compensate for those. I know it has nothing to do with housing, but it has to do with survival. And he's trying to teach me survival skills. He has gone out of his way to do like a father-daughter talk with me about how to survive on the streets, especially with the men out in the streets, you know, trying to take advantage. And for that, I'm grateful. I have two sons who are grown, who are 26 and 24, and who have been a real asset to me. So that has helped. I do need to get out. I do need to have housing. Housing is very difficult, like I said, for disabled people. I had a caseworker come down from CMHC yesterday trying to push housing. Mm-hmm. But like everyone has said, there's very little housing for anyone, let alone disabled people. For me, people have worked extremely hard to try to get me out of here because I am disabled and because I do have, I am outspoken and I do have, I am very self-opinionated and they'd like to see me out of here and I don't blame them.
You know, well, on this program, opinionated is good.
Good.
So we thank you for that. Let me give out those numbers again, 877-NOBODY-8 or 866-LEFT-OUT. And on the line, we have another disabled person, Jack from Culver City. Jack, welcome to the Homelessness Marathon.
Yes, hello. Thank you for a great program. Geez, I suffered terribly in pain for so long. I mean, it was just my spiritual growth that kept me from doing myself in because I felt that it was too sinful and not the way to go, and I just kept biting the bullet. But by hospices, sometimes you can find a good pain management doctor. And it's really crazy. They've even done tests. I mean, if people get good pain management, they're not interested in assisted suicide or anything like that.
Oh, there's an interesting point,
too. It's just a real heartbreak. And I was first disabled by car accident, drunken, crazy driver. But previously to that, I worked in the shipyards, down Todd Shipyards, which was mainly military contracts. And they didn't tell us, like, when they brought nuclear radioactive substances. Like, I guess it was a nuclear submarine that we were building, you know. And by going to doctors and stuff, I found out that I was, like, super radioactive, and that's been helped a lot. But the shame of it is, like, after that car accident, if I would have had proper physical therapy, I could have been a productive citizen years ago. And then the police misidentified me, and they thought I was some murderer. And after I had been handcuffed, they beat me cripple all over again after trying to recover so much. And the person that saved me happened to be an immigrant who was sleeping on the street. They wouldn't even give him food stamps. He's dead now. And when I can get it together enough, I go out and at night I try and find people and give them hot milk or something just to, you know, it helps me to see the smile on their face. But it's really something else. I mean, there was nothing I could do because when I had been beaten by the police so badly, I was basically very narcoleptic, semi-comatose for 2 years. And so this attorney, he just dropped me, never referred me to anybody. And by the time I did get an attorney, the papers that were supposed to be filed and everything were gone. And I don't know. And the thing of being isolated, too. I mean, when people become disabled, you don't show up. Your friends tend to forget you. And, I mean, when your legs don't work, it's really tough to be socially active. And thanks a lot for this program. But it's amazing because people that are on disability, Social Security disability, you and I paid into it all those years. In California, we have what's called the California Benefits Recovery Act, loosely. That's the name of it. And if somehow or other I did get gainful employment, they could come after me for all the years of services. So the result of me getting a job would be losing my benefits and becoming homeless again.
And you do have Section 8, though, right?
Yeah. Right now I have Section 8, but the way it's going up, and you know, I just keep my fingers crossed that I can keep it. And I have to I can't afford to see the doctor as often as I'm supposed to.
Well, can you tell Anthony and, Alfonso and Doris how long you had to wait? Because they're waiting for Section 8. They're waiting for housing. How long did you have to wait?
I waited about 3 years. But wow. One little, I don't know if you can call it a trick or
that's
a trade.
That's depressing.
But, I got an eviction notice. And then I got a letter from my doctor saying that my living condition was exacerbating the decline of my health condition. So I think that might have helped me save some time there. And people can try that, disabled people. And it's amazing, you know, we're not eligible for food stamps, because we get disability no matter how much the medical costs are or anything like that. And
all right. Well, Jack, I want to thank you very, very much for calling in, and we wish you all the best.
A pound of prevention is worth a ton of cure, and it's so sad that so many people that are so disabled. Like I say, I could have been working for years. I have a 147 IQ. I ran a cloth business. I did so many different things. And it just, I mean, it kills, well, you know.
I hear you.
It just
I hear
really
you.
Hurts.
I want to thank you very much for the call.
But,
thank you. Alfonso, are you eligible for food stamps?
Yes, I am.
Okay, so you can get food stamps.
But I only get about $10 a month.
Oh, God, just like somebody else was on. And what about you, Doris?
I am eligible, but I have not been able to get down there to get any any financial assistance. I do have a friend who does take me around, but I got separated from him. If anybody does hear of a man named Lance Barrett, who I got separated from, who does take me around and is a companion, I would appreciate if they would have him give me a call at the Columbus House so I can find my way around, because that's the missing piece I have in my brain, which is I cannot find my way around and do directions.
Oh, okay.
I can't do directions, and I can't remember where I've been or where I'm going, and he does get me to places. And unfortunately, my caseworker, like I mentioned, Debbie Brooks, has been very ill. That's her private business, but she has worked extremely hard to get those benefits. I'm not on the radio to badmouth anybody or badmouth the Columbus House or any organization that's here, I'm here to speak and say that we do need help, you know, that the disabled are kind of brushed under the carpet unless you have someone on your side, which I do have, but to help us because we're not going to get out alone. You know, there's just not enough resources out there to help us. But I think we need to work with staff, you know, not against them to get ourselves out. I believe that you get more help with honey and not vinegar. And one thing I have learned here, and I'm grateful that this did happen to me because I've learned that there's no wrong way to do the right thing. So wise woman, Debbie Brooks, told me that. And, you know, I did come from a place where I was making $1 million a year to homeless.
That's pretty unfortunate. Alfonso, let me ask you, do you get SSI?
I get SSDI.
Okay. And how, if I may ask, how much do you get per month?
I get about, between about $666 a month from SSDI.
$666. This is what the truly needy get in America, $666 a month?
It doesn't help that much at all. Because you find that sometimes when you don't have low-income housing for the handicapped, and you do have other organizations that you can get into the low-income, you know, that they do pay somewhat your rent, and you pay a third of it. But even then, sometimes it gets hard, too, because, like I said, sometimes when the state puts you on spend down, you end up spending your Social Security check on trying to get medication. And it's very difficult. And then it's difficult sometimes. You can't even buy food. And you have to sacrifice your medication for food. You know, just so when you have your own housing, it's very difficult. And it's a real problem that this country is not being the way they should be in helping the handicapped or anybody or any homeless person at all. They really needs the help. I mean, there are people that are that wants to have their own, you know, and like me myself, I would love to have my own, and I got a traveling companion that helps me get around to where I need to, because I find myself sometimes I can't even wheel my own wheelchair. Yeah. And I want to say one thing, that now that I have come to a conclusion that my spirituality has went up very high, because that's all I have to rely on is my spirituality. And I use that a lot with people and saying, well, there is hope. And sometimes I feel the same way, that my medical condition causes me to think about suicide, you know. And there were times where I attempted it. And being in pain constantly is something that I don't like. And I'm going to be truthful with you. There was a time where I did commit suicide, and I had jumped out the third floor window because I had other issues and whatnot in my life. And I had a mental problem. But I find now that the medication that they have given me for being real depressed is what got me in this chair today. And I find that I will not take any type of psych meds at all, because I'm afraid of the side effects on what it might do more damage to me.
Okay. Well, listen, did your suicide attempt have anything to do with your medical condition?
Yes, it had.
Okay. Well, we're very sorry, all of us, I'm sure, to hear that. Very sorry indeed, and we're very sorry you're in the state you're in, no matter how you got there. Don from Los Angeles, are you on the line still?
Yes, I am.
Well, thank you for your patience, Don. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to say a couple of things. In Los Angeles, I was you had asked about Section 8 and how long it takes. I was on Section 8, waiting for Section 8 in Los Angeles. I was waiting for 8 years.
Wow.
After 8 years, they finally called, and I was supposed to come in for an interview. And the day that they were giving me for the interview, I was out of town burying my mother. She had died. Wasn't burying her before she died.
Good point.
Yeah. But seriously, the point I'm making is after waiting for 8 years, I couldn't come in for the appointment. They set up a second appointment for me. And the date of the second appointment, like Murphy's Law, that was the date that the movers were coming to my parents' home to take my dad's stuff out, and we were putting him in a rest home. I couldn't make that appointment. And they just took me off. They said, just sign up again.
You've lost me, I have to admit.
After waiting for 8 years to get Section 8 housing, I was taken off because I missed two appointments.
But I heard that, maybe I misunderstood, the first time your father died and
my mother passed.
Oh, that's what I couldn't understand. Because
so
usually you don't go to a nursing home after you're dead.
And when they rescheduled the appointment for, like, you know, 3 weeks later, 6 weeks later, whatever it was, the date that they rescheduled it for, I had to go back to my parents' house because the movers were moving my father out.
Well,
yeah.
So you are here to say it is not easy getting Section 8 housing, and if you even make one slip,
essentially the point I was making.
Yeah, and if you even have one thing, it can completely screw you up.
Another thing that also there's a problem with and with the system is I was collecting SSI disability. Mm-hmm. I've got a bad back. I've got a degenerative disc disease and have trouble moving around. I've been on a cane for decades. I was collecting disability, and I had gotten a little bit better, and, you know, it wasn't to the point where I was, you know, able to run a marathon or anything, but I'd gotten somewhat better, and by my way of thinking, which wasn't really all that good at the time, I took myself off of disability. I said, oh, no, I could go back to work. And I tried doing it, and after about a year, year and a half, I realized I'd done something really stupid, because I couldn't work. I couldn't stand for any length of time. I couldn't sit for any length of time. I was hurting real bad. And they wouldn't put me back on disability because I'd worked.
There you go. All right, Don. Listen, I think you've given people a good little insight into what it's like to be dealing with the system, and I want to thank you very much for the call. The numbers to call in here again are 877-NOBODY-8 or 866-LEFT-OUT, and it's Ethan, I believe, from Portland, Oregon. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Ethan, thank you. I am told you have a poem you want to read?
I do have a bit of a work I was just putting together here.
Okay.
It's a little bit long, but go ahead and feel free to stop me if I...
Well, how long is a little bit long here?
Oh, it's about a page and a half. They're short lines.
All right, well, let's go for it. Just
okay.
I like poetry, so let's hear it.
Homelessness shines forward forever upon our future. A shadow cast underneath, notice, internalized, a stain, dirty upon our society, a gaze, avoided by passersby. Homelessness becomes what was our future. Homelessness is what could have been. Homelessness is a topic avoided. We don't look at the sores. Homelessness is what could be. Homelessness is the people without chance, without opportunity, even sometimes without will. Homelessness, it's an inability to find hope, an inability to stay warm, an inability to fit in, an inability to beg. Homelessness is lost to what we see day to day, yet us, we see ourselves as immune. We are not immune. 2 weeks, perhaps, 1 month. How many paychecks are you away from the street? How many people live on your street? How many outside? How many do you invite inside? When you attend your Sunday service, do you think of those men, of those women? When passing the plate, do you remember the gaze is not sought for guilt? When passing your plate to the next, you're warm inside, your church is well lit. You could sleep here if tired. How many homeless sleep inside your church at night? How many do you bring around the block to your door each night to sup? Perhaps we see life as it should be, not as it is. Perhaps we should look into our reality to seek change in our time. We must make change. What path do we walk, forgetting each other in our haste? What future we seek, looking not to a side for guilt? Where will it end if not now? Where will we stop if we never start? What will become of this world when we forget that we're here for? What becomes of a people doomed and forgetting themselves? What becomes the forgotten? Why are we shredding the nets? Why aren't we trying to change? When will we realize? When will we decide together? When can we admit? When will we see the breakdowns by age, by 12 and those older? Breakdowns as children, as families strapped under? Just when will we stand up? When will we take note? When will we, the haves? When will we stop forgetting our forgotten? Just who must we be, and how far are we willing to bend? How long will we hear not the crying? How long are we willing to be pushed, left behind? When will we make this, today, now, our line in the sand?
Well, thank you very much, Ethan, for sharing that with us. And thank you. Thank you very much. That was very nice, and I appreciate it. We have here at the microphone, Lou at the mic, patiently waiting from WPKN. Lou, welcome to the Homelessness Marathon.
Thank you, Jeremy. I'll try to make this very quick because I know we don't have very much time. I want to make sure that I thank Doug Eccles, who has been at the studios at PKN all night long, Pete Stewart, who's our public affairs director, who's on the air right now, Phil Bowler, our music director, Ben Churchill, our general manager, Harry Minot, and Rod Richardson, all of who have been instrumental and paramount in making this happen at the studio. And I want to thank everyone for the opportunity to host this event. But my main message is to those of us who aren't handicapped, who have our health, who have our children, and they, you know, do the soccer mom thing and the little league thing and have their cars and their two jobs and maybe a maid and two cars and a beautiful home. This is the people who I want to reach. You don't have to tell a person who's handicapped about being handicapped. They already know, trust me. It's been mentioned already that the majority of us are maybe a paycheck or two away from homelessness. That could not be more true. I speak from experience, and rather than tell you what I've been through, I just, because everyone has already made mention of it and done so very eloquently, it could really happen. You know, imagine yourself with a small injury and you have no idea what the process is, even if you have a great job. Dealing with the system, workman's compensation, it's not a walk in the park. And if you give me all of your money for a month, I guarantee you, it's going to impact your life, your family's life. And don't think that just because you're not handicapped and you're driving down in your Beamer or your brand new car, not to say that there's anything wrong with that. God bless you if you do have that. But it can hit you at any moment. You, your wife, your children. So I cannot impress upon everyone the importance of understanding that this very thing can happen to you at any moment. At least open your heart. Show some compassion. I've heard people talk about the response to the marathon is, who cares about them? I don't care. That's not my problem.
You've heard somebody say
that? More so than yes. Well, in the street, I've heard people say that, you know.
You heard that tonight? Somebody said
No, not tonight. Not tonight. But in the past, I've in preparing for the marathon, I've spoken with people.
Well, I only want to say we need some goons working for the marathon, and we'll take care of those people.
Exactly.
All right.
Listen, maybe. Jeremy, thank you so much.
Listen, Lou, I want to say a couple words to you. First of all, by a strange coincidence, you've thanked some of the people I want to thank. I want to thank Harry Minot, who is the general manager at WPKN, our host station this year, without whom this wouldn't be possible. I want to thank Pete Stewart, who not only is working the boards tonight, but if it wasn't for Pete Stewart, the Homelessness Marathon would not have been on PKN to begin with, because he was the program director when the marathon first came to WPKN. And I want to thank WPKN itself.
Hoorah!
Which is a wonderful station, and thank you all. And I want to thank Lewis Pomales, who happens to be standing at the mic. I want to thank you, Louis, for getting this all together on the PKN side and making this possible. And so, well, you're there, and I was going to thank you anyway. And as long as you're there, I want to thank you right to your face. So thank you very much,
Jerry.
It's really been an honor to be working with all of you, and thank you so much.
All right.
All right, and as a matter of fact, I'm going to take a little break here before we just close this out to say a few more thank yous. And I'll tell you, the thank yous is actually my least favorite time. And the reason I don't like the thank yous isn't that I don't like to thank people. It's that there's too many people, I always leave people out, and then I feel bad. So to those of you I'm about to leave out, please accept my apologies. We have more thank yous on our website, www.homelessnessmarathon.com. But I would like to mention just a few people here. My wife, Ellen, of course. My son, Michael, who has worked the marathon every year and who I forgot to thank last year, and I don't want to make the same mistake twice. See, folks, I've really been bad. I want to thank my crew who's worked here so many years. Carrie Seed, Bill Lamb, Dan Rose, Karen DeAndre, Lee Mandel, Jessica Lockhart, without whom I couldn't have done this, and I thank you all from the bottom of my heart. I want to thank a couple of people who turned up unexpectedly to help out. Jacqueline Richard, who has let me call her JC, which I just love because I never called anybody JC before. John Truesdale, who has helped us immensely. He's helped us so much. I actually discussed marriage with him, and I'm married already, you know? I mean, but John has just been great, and I can't say enough. He came here, and he really rescued us when we were floundering for technical help. I want to thank also everybody here at Columbus House, especially Allison Cunningham, the director, and Bill Johnston, the director of operations. And I know that's just the tip of the iceberg, but the people here at Columbus House have really been great to us. And so those are a few of the thank yous. And again, my apologies to everybody I left out, because believe me, I've left out a lot of people. This show doesn't just fall off the turnip truck. It takes a lot of work for a lot of people to get it together, and I can't list them all. And that's why we started listing the thank yous on our website instead of trying to say them all on the air. But those are a few that I did want to say. Okay, we have somebody. We have a gentleman at the microphone. And at the microphone we have...
Anthony Dixon.
Okay, Anthony, welcome back. It's a little hard to see in the glare there. Anthony, you got another poem you want to read?
Yes, I have a couple things to do real brief.
Okay, because brief is the operative word here. We're out of time almost.
I want to address the 90-day policy. It was a misunderstanding. That doesn't pertain to this shelter. It pertains to another shelter that you might have to go to if you don't get it here, if you're not fortunate enough. I have a poem called Why Me? Why me? Why me? Why did I have to be the one to be taken advantage of? Mistreated, beaten, and showed no love. No birthday present, used like a peasant, neglected, rejected, and hated in presence. Question, is it a crime for being so great in the essence? Must be preventing me to become what I was destined. What kind of lesson did they expect me to be taught? That love cannot be gained but can only be bought. Throw blows at my body, maybe the interpretation will be caught. Then hand me down all your burdens and say it's all my fault. I can't take this lightly. I can only ask why me. And I want to speak about the Homeland Security. You know, the millions and billions of dollars that go into that. You know, I rode the train. I've been in New Haven like 6 years. I rode the train for the first time a couple months ago. I did not feel secure at all. You know, I feel like, you know what I'm saying, they tightened down on the airport system. And, you know, it's like they locked the front door, but they left the back door open. Because, you know, the train systems, the bus systems, you know what I'm saying, it's so easy and so vulnerable. For, you know, a terrorist, a sleeper cell attack can take
Look what they did
place.
In Madrid. Anthony, I want to thank you very much for sharing your poems and your thoughts with us tonight. Therese, you have some things you want to add.
In closing, I just want to say that I'm grateful and thankful that the Columbus House is here. No, this is not permanent housing, but it is temporary, and it gives us a place to go to stay and eat and rest our head. I'd like to thank the staff. Like I said, I'd like to thank Gary Barnett, Debbie Brooks, the women and men who have watched over me while I wasn't feeling well and compensated for my brain disability. I'd like to thank my two children, Ellery and Gabriel Morrell, and Lance Barrett for getting me around. And like I said, if anybody can find him, I'd appreciate having him give me a call at the Columbus House. I'd like to thank the staff for putting up with me and compensating for the mistakes that I have made. I think we all need to work together and help each other to get out of this predicament and not work against each other. Keep in mind the staff is working very hard to get us out of here and to get us permanent housing and to respect them as they respect us and remember that they're working for us, not against us. I'd like to thank the radio station for being here to hear us, and hopefully God will provide for all of us because God is good and God does not like garbage, and He is working very hard to keep us all together. And
okay.
I thank you very much.
And Alfonso, have you got a last? It doesn't have to be a long list of thank yous, although it could be. Do you have a last word? What would you like people to know about? Speaking it from the perspective of a homeless, disabled man in pain, what do you want America to know?
I want them to know that, for me, it's very difficult to try to get out to find your own place. And there isn't enough money to go around, and there's not enough traveling vans that goes around in some places with some... traveling, you have to pay money just to for transportation, and people that are handicapped really need help with that because it's a real problem. And me, you know, being in a length of stay program, just like I want to redirect that, being an LOS does mean length of stay, which meaning being in that type of program, they give you so much time to find housing and getting yourself right, you know. But I like Americans to know that it's very hard to be in this position. And sitting here talking to, you know, to national radio, being on national radio, is very difficult for me, you know. And my higher power has been the one that's kept me, and also Mr. Kaplan and all the rest. I'd like to thank everybody here for all their help, and Gary Burnett and my kids manager, Mr. Preston, and my traveling companion also.
All right. Well, I want to thank both of you, Doris and Alfonso, for being my guests here. I know it's very difficult for you both to speak, and you did both of you did great. And so I really want to thank you. By the way, I'd like to throw in a little thank you to my parents, too, without whom I wouldn't be doing this. And I just want to leave everybody out there with a couple of thoughts. You know, I mean, one thing I always like to say at the end of the marathon is you got to be able to think it before you can do it. And we've got to be able to think about solving this problem. We can solve this problem. And I don't care if we're all just voices in the wind. You know, if we have enough voices in the wind, we will be heard. We can do this. We do not have to acquiesce in the doom of our society. We do not have to acquiesce in letting people die out on the streets. And I always like to end by paraphrasing Ben-Gurion, who said, well, this is a paraphrase, but this is the basic point that he made. He said, if you don't believe in miracles, you're not a realist. So I say, let's all be very realistic, and let's solve this problem of homelessness. Thank you all for listening tonight.